There's been a record number of generic drug approvals over the past few years, but there's a problem.
Many of them are not actually for sale.
And Gordon Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the EU, is set to testify today as part of the impeachment probe.
It's expected to be a pretty crucial testimony because Sondland has a firsthand knowledge of a lot of the major episodes of the impeachment inquiry.
Plus, our exclusive interview with exiled Bolivian President Evo Morales. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a look at why an increase in generic drug approvals hasn't resulted in those drugs actually making it to market, here's what you missed. Evo Morales, Bolivia's exiled president, sat down with us in Mexico City for an exclusive interview. We asked whether he'd be willing to sit out Bolivia's next presidential election. Here's what he had to say in response.
Si se trata por la paz, si se trata para que no haya vidas, más vidas perdidas, ningún problema.
To translate, he says that he would be willing to do so if it led to peace. He later added he would like to finish the last few months of his term and work with the opposition to name a new electoral authority to oversee the next vote to choose a new leader. Mr. Morales is Bolivia's first indigenous president. He resigned 10 days ago after growing turmoil in the wake of a disputed October election. International observers and the opposition had accused Mr. Morales of rigging the election in order to stay in power for a fourth consecutive term. Since his departure, which Mr. Morales has called a coup, Bolivia has seen violent protests. He told us during the interview that he thought the unrest would continue unless the two sides, his party and the opposition, could reach a compromise. And the Senate passed a bill yesterday unanimously supporting Hong Kong's protesters. Here's Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
We in the United States stand in solidarity with the democratic protesters who have every right to assemble and petition their government for their rights as citizens of Hong Kong.
The legislation would require the U.S. Secretary of State to certify annually that Hong Kong remained sufficiently independent from Beijing to warrant its special status. It would also task the president with placing sanctions on individuals who've suppressed human rights in Hong Kong. It's similar to a bill that was passed by the House last month. Separately, a former consulate employee of the British Embassy in Hong Kong claimed that Chinese secret police beat him, deprived him of sleep, and chained him spread-eagled. Simon Cheng is a Hong Kong citizen who was arrested in August amid anti-government protests. He told us he was pressed for information about the activists who are leading the demonstrations and about the role his interrogators presumed that Britain was playing in encouraging the unrest. British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab condemned China's treatment of Mr. Cheng, which he said amounted to torture. A Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman said Mr. Cheng's case is not a diplomatic issue. Now, our main story this morning. Since 2016, the Food and Drug Administration has approved 2,492 generic versions of 617 brand name drugs. But less than two-thirds of those have been launched into the market. That's according to the health research firm IQVIA. J.R. Whalen has been finding out what's led to the holdup from Jared Hopkins.
So, Jared, approvals of generic drugs are actually up, but the lower-priced drugs are caught up in delays?
There's a record number of generic drug approvals over the last few years, but many of them are not actually for sale. Many of them are not launching into the commercial market. There's a few reasons for this. When a company applies for a generic drug approval, it might be several years before it's actually approved by the FDA, and by then the business might have a different strategy. The other reason, and many drug industry officials and other researchers point to, is that there is protracted legal tie-ups ranging from patent litigation to brand name drug makers taking out additional patents on their drugs.
And this ramp up in approvals was intended to drive down the overall price of drugs.
The more generic drugs that are introduced into the market, the higher chances of bringing down the price. And so the additional approvals have been a measured effort or a concentrated effort by the FDA to increased competition for the market. About 4 generic drugs have to be introduced in order to bring down the cost of the brand name drug on average by about 39-40%.
Now, numbers-wise, how big a backlog of the lower-priced drugs, the approval of those drugs, are we looking at?
Fewer than 2/3 of the drugs have launched, while more than one-third of the generic drugs that have been approved are not for sale yet.
What does the FDA have to say?
So the FDA says that it's encouraged by the recent approvals, and to note that drug companies themselves decide whether or not or when to launch a drug, that that they approve it, and that the company decides whether to launch it. I mean, it is worth noting that the FDA in 2017 began an effort to increase drug approvals. There was a backlog of generic drug approvals, and so that did ramp up. You know, talking with some researchers and some other experts, is that that's one hurdle to getting drugs on set, to getting generic drugs to the market. The other sort of piece here is litigation and other tie-ups that involve separate of the approval process.
Well, it seems this is going to keep the topic of runaway drug prices in the forefront of the minds of Americans.
Drug pricing in America and high drug prices has been a big topic on the political spectrum and in campaigns and from the Trump administration. And it's also been on the mind of consumers and patients. And one way to bring down drug prices is the introduction of generics into any sort of market. And if you talk to researchers, they point to this as this is one way to do that, entry of generic drugs. And if that doesn't happen, then high costs and high drug prices will remain there for patients.
You can find Jared's story up on WSJ.com. On to markets. The name Carl Icahn might ring a bell. He's one of the world's most successful investors. Now, we're exclusively reporting that he's decided to make a bet that's foiled others. It's a bet against malls. Well, mall owners, to be more precise. He thinks that as more and more of us shop online and stop going to physical malls, those owners will have a hard time paying their debts. Steve Russolillo has more.
Carl Icahn is a billionaire investor. You might remember him from the 1980s, the big corporate raider taking down companies, now better known as an activist investor. And his latest bet now is against mall owners, and specifically that mall owners will struggle to pay down their debts in the future. And so, again, it's a bet against the malls. And it's one, frankly, that a lot of investors have tried now for years. A lot of other investors have bet on the so-called death of the mall, the idea that with the proliferation of online shopping and declining foot traffic at stores means that malls will continue to suffer in the future. The problem, though, is that a lot of investors have really not actually made a lot of money on this bet. If anything, they've lost. It's put one hedge fund manager out of business who essentially bet his entire portfolio on this thesis and lost. And so here comes Carl Icahn now, perhaps the biggest investor of all in this trade, who's basically betting against mall owners. And if his trade proves successful, he could stand to win as much as $400 million on it.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. In Washington, we'll get what's expected to be the most high-profile hearing of the impeachment inquiry. Gordon Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the EU, is set to testify. From Washington, Rebecca Ballhouse has more.
Wednesday's testimony by Gordon Sondland will be the first time that the ambassador is going to be asked about a July 26th call that he allegedly had with President Trump, in which Trump asked him about the investigations, and he replied that the president of Ukraine was willing to do essentially whatever the president wanted. And this is, so Sondland has now testified in October and then filed a revision to that testimony, saying that he later remembered a key episode that others had testified to, but he has not testified before about this July 26th call, which we only learned about last week. So it's expected to be a pretty crucial testimony because Sondland has a firsthand knowledge of a lot of the major episodes of the impeachment inquiry.
Laura Cooper, a Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, and David Hale, the Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, are also set to testify today. We'll keep you updated on the latest in our afternoon edition. And later tonight, we'll get the fifth Democratic presidential debate. It's taking place in Atlanta this time. Julie Bekowitz has more on what to expect.
Joe Biden is likely to get questions about his son at this debate, and I would expect that the other candidates would be asked similar questions along the lines of, do you think this was an appropriate position for a vice president's or government official's son to have? That's because the impeachment hearings have sort of made sure that not only news about President Trump and, you know, allegations about what he did to pressure Ukraine on Democratic investigations, but also Mr. Biden's role in Ukraine and his son's simultaneous position on Burisma, the Ukrainian energy company.
And if you're feeling like you've had enough of the debates, well, Julie says her reporting indicates you might not be alone.
So I talked to voters in early primary states and just across the country about, you know, are you even watching these debates? What do you think of them? And resoundingly, the answer is, I feel like it's all the same thing over and over. And there have now been 15 hours of Democratic debates, and there's a lot of evidence that voters either are tuning them out or are just sort of bored with the process and don't feel like it makes much of an impact on how they think of the Democratic field.
Regardless of if you watch or if you decide to skip, we'll still have a recap of the highlights in our show tomorrow. Finally, you might fantasize about being able to ditch your car, but would you pay to live in a community that explicitly bans them? We're reporting that a new $140 million development in Tempe, Arizona, is banning residents from bringing their own cars in favor of scooters, bikes, and ride-sharing. The founders of the 1,000-person rental community say the neighborhood will be the first of its kind in the U.S. It will include a market hall for food vendors, a coffee shop, plazas, and communal fire pits. They say they're testing demand for a new type of walkable neighborhood. So what do you think? Is there demand to live in car-free neighborhoods? You can tweet us at WSJ Podcasts. That's what's news from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.